The other day I made a phone call and immediately felt that I was not heard. It is such a terrible feeling. And it was a moment of pause and wonder on my end if the operator, the person that was answering the phone, had the training that was needed to convey the business that they were supporting. And it made me think that if they had the training, our interaction would have been very different and I would have felt heard and my outlook on that business would have been completely different. I also love when you know someone is smiling on the other end of the phone. You can feel that in their energy. Or if you're walking down the street and someone smiles at you, it is powerful. It makes you feel like this sense of belonging. That is what we're talking about today. My guest is the author of Smile and Succeed for Teens, a crash course in face-to-face communication, must-know people skills for today's wired world. Welcome to the Special Ed Strategist podcast, where we strategize all things special ed. Today is a really interesting conversation. There was many takeaways in this in terms of teaching and modeling for our teens. Whether you are a teacher or a professional, you do not want to miss this conversation today. I'm your host, Wendy Taylor, and I'm a mom and a special educator. I have sat on both sides of the IEP table as a parent and a professional over the last 25 plus years. I've made it my passion and mission to help parents and professionals bridge learning gaps, access special education services, and build kick-butt IEPs. If you want more tips, show us some love on social at Learning Essentials. If you are new to our podcast, give us a download, a share, and a follow. Let's get ready to strategize special ed style. Welcome to our show. I'm really excited to have Kurt join us today and have this really valuable conversation in terms of helping our students and our learners smile a little bit more and what that actually means. So welcome, Kurt, to the show.
Thank you so much, Wendy. It's so nice to be here.
Thanks for joining us. So can you just give us a little insight to what you do and how you support our diverse learners?
Sure. I am an author. I'm a business person, but I also wrote a couple books. My first one is a crash course in customer service and sales. The one we're talking about today, I wrote for teenagers, and it provides them with a lot of the little skills, which I think we overlook nowadays, as far as saying please and thank you, cell phone etiquette, manners, how to be a great employee, things like that. So I provide schools and parents with those resources to help them help these young adults succeed, because a lot of these young adults probably have never had some of these skills taught to them, maybe in the schools or sometimes at home.
You're absolutely right. And I find with, and that is why I think this is an important discussion for us to be able to share out to families that are listening, professionals, to help guide our young adults as they're transitioning into this world. And there's so much around them that is changing that little things tend to get lost or not taught maybe directly in the school system. And so I think having you on to give us the scope of how we can improve the outcomes of our learners is really important. So can you just tell me a little bit about, let's talk more about the skills you see as desirable for teens in the workforce?
Sure. That's a great question. You know, years ago, I had a specialty retail store and it was a kind of a cool place for teenagers to work. So we'd get a number of teenagers that would come in and they'd want to work there because it was back when windsurfing was popular. We had snowboards, inline skates by Rollerblade, all the Oakley sunglasses, the wetsuits from O'Neill. So I would get hundreds of kids who wanted to work there. But the skills I was looking for from an employer's point of view, somebody who has good people skills. And if I had a teen walk in and they were dressed properly, had great eye contact, smiled, and were polite, and asked me, could I please have a job application? I'm interested in working here. I was always thinking in my head, would this person be somebody who would be a good person to wait on Wendy, and would she come back? Or would this person cause me to lose a customer? Because I can't afford to lose a customer. So these skills we're talking about are really good social skills, you know, saying, answering that phone properly, creating a great first impression all the time. You can't afford to lose a single customer. Saying please and thank you, saying you're welcome, not yep, not no problem. being off those phones all the time. So those are the skills that are so important. Really, it's manners. It's things more that when I was little, we really didn't have to teach, but now we've overlooked a lot of these skills, and they are actually the skills that create friendships and that bring customers back time and time again. And I was lucky to have great teenagers working for me, but that was before cell phones. So I didn't have that problem to deal with.
No, you didn't have, and social media and all of that to deal
exactly.
with.
Exactly.
So what is the power of a smile?
You know what? It's actually proven, and I know we don't really need to bring statistics in, but it is proven that when you smile, people buy more. And the power of a smile, it's proven also to make people feel better. I forgot what, if it's dopamine or whatever it is in your brain. I'm not a psychiatrist or anything like that. I try to remember those terms and I always forget them. But it is proven to make that other person feel better. And I'll tell you what, the power of a smile can change somebody else's day. I mean, I don't know about you, but I always try when I see somebody, if I'm walking by, just to smile and say hi, because you never know, especially with the elderly. You know, I read an article years ago in Reader's Digest, and the editor of Reader's Digest, I've never forgotten it, said she was in the grocery store and she was behind an elderly woman. And the woman told the cashier, "I haven't talked to anybody in a month." I thought that was so sad. So, you know, smile and say hi to people. It might change their day. You never know what somebody is going through. And as far as work, when you smile and greet a customer properly, that really stands out. Because how many times do you go to a business or call a business and that doesn't happen? So it really sets the foundation for really good, solid relationships, whether it's friendships or work relationships.
And a couple of things. First, I think even if the person is answering the phone, you can tell genuinely if they want to be there and be a part of the conversation with you, right? And so I think that's important to convey to our teens. And yes. Also, I think in the world of texting and so forth, our teens are not really exposed to answering a phone the right way. And so I'll even teach my students and parents that I work with about practicing, because as you're transitioning to life and to post-secondary, you may need to make a doctor's appointment. You may need to make some type of phone call. And so for some of our learners, having that time to practice physically, you know, dialing the phone and being able to leave a proper voicemail is really overlooked, I think, a lot of times.
That's so well said, Wendy. And I never thought about the doctor's appointment, things like that. I'm always looking at things from a work perspective. You're absolutely right. That is so overlooked. And I have that in my parents' guide and my teaching guide, actually. I have role playing, because when I was writing my book, I had a group of teenagers help me over 9 months writing the book just to get their input. And they said, "You should put something in there about ordering a pizza." And I said, "Well, why?" And this teen said, "Because my sister is terrified to make a phone call."
Yeah.
You're absolutely right. Yeah, but kids are not, they're texting and they're doing things like that, but they're not talking on the phone. And that's so important at work. I mean, how many times have you called a business, an adult or a teen has not answered the phone properly and has not answered it with a smile,
yeah.
Which makes a huge difference.
Right. And kind of to the point about employment, practicing that, because if you're going to follow up with some sort of voice message or call to a potential employer, have your child practice ahead of time, have your team practice ahead of time, because that really is setting the seed. Like you said, when somebody came into your storefront and was like, "I would like to work here," you kind of shuffle into two different categories of thought. And I know we're not supposed to make this instantaneous judgment, but you kind of think, all right, how are they carrying themselves? What does their voice sound like? And that really kind of then can set the stage for later in terms of that connection with, like you said, future folks that are coming into your store and repeat customers.
Exactly. I was in Aldi last night and I was buying some groceries and the cashier, she smiled. She said, "Oh, these sardines look great." I mean, it's just that interaction and that smile. And I thought, what a great employee. You know, it just in your brain, it sets that person apart from so many other people. And for business, it's critical. It really is. I can't tell you when we had our business, because I was on the floor all the time, so I'd watch this happen. We had great teenagers. They were always smiling, saying hi. If you left the store, "Bye, Wendy, have a great day. We look forward to seeing you again." I mean, how many times does that happen? But I would watch through the years, like you come back, bring a friend, that your friend would come back and bring all their friends. maybe the first purchase was a swimsuit, but the third purchase was $6,000 for a windsurfer, the wetsuit, the car rack, the inline skates, the surf clothes, the sun, everything. And that would have never happened had that first interaction not been with a smile.
That's
and
right.
They become friends. You know, your customers are your friends. It's so powerful.
So whose job is it to teach kids these skills?
I think it's the parents. I really do. I you know, the schools teach that, but it seems like schools, everything gets thrown on the schools. You know, if there's something new out, all the schools should teach that. They'd have to be open 24 hours a day to do. I feel bad for some of the teachers. I think the schools, of course, because sometimes maybe the parents overlook it. And maybe the parents were never taught those skills. I had a doctor who was a doctor for my mom. She had a terrible receptionist, but the doctor had great people skills, but the doctor didn't recognize how bad her receptionist was. And I had to politely tell her that, you know, you have great people skills, but that person in, you want somebody with great people skills in your reception, that's the first contact. And she really didn't understand. She goes, well, don't we have somebody like that? So I think it's the parents, if they've been exposed to that before, but sometimes if they haven't, then I think at least let's have the schools teach it also.
Right, right. Let's talk a little bit more about communication. How do you define effective communication?
I think it's clear, it's concise, it's considerate and respectful. And by respectful, I mean that somebody's not on their cell phone. You know, have you ever, I'm sure your listeners, or maybe you've gone out to dinner and you're talking to somebody and they're checking their cell phone.
Yeah.
So that's how I would say, very respectful, polite, and clear.
What does that look like socially?
Socially, it looks like you're giving that person your full attention and you're also listening well. So you're not just listening in order for them to stop so you can start talking. But you're listening and asking them questions and engaging that person and really showing an interest in what they're talking about. And I think that's so important. And again, not being on the cell phone, not looking at other people that are walking by, paying attention to that one person and making them feel like they're the only person that matters.
Which means a ton, for sure.
Yes.
How do we convey that to our teens? Again, when their way of communicating is through a cell phone?
That's a great question. I think what you said earlier, Wendy, is so important to practice and role play and role play and role play. You know, when I had our store, we used to practice all the time, but I would call, I knew a particular business that didn't answer the phone properly. And that was before caller ID. So I could call that business when I had my store meetings and I would ask my teens, how would you feel if you called that business and they just answered it that way? And they'd say, well, not very good. Would you buy something? Would you go there again? No. So let's practice answering the phone properly. So I think a lot of role playing. And I also think, and this is just my opinion, and I don't know how you feel about this, I still can't figure out why we're giving kids smartphones in the first place, considering all the negative and awful consequences that can come with them. And I'll tell you, my friend has a Little Caesars up in Canada. And I talked to him the other day. He said, Kurt, I have a lot of teens working for me. If I catch them once with their cell phone out, they're fired. We don't give any warnings because I can't lose my business or a single customer over a bad experience from a teen. And I'll tell you, I don't know why these kids have these cell phones. I really don't understand why parents are just giving them a smartphone like that, given all the terrible consequences. Because if they didn't, we wouldn't be talking about this right now.
Yeah, I think that's a whole other show on that.
I think it is too.
When to get a smartphone and how that works out. You kind of led us to that. What would professionally effective communication look like professionally to support our teens? How could we guide them with that?
I think, like we talked about before, first giving them the information so that they're aware of it, and then doing a lot of role playing with that, as far as maybe it's volunteering at a farmer's market. Maybe they're doing something like that. Standing up, engaged, smiling at everybody that walks by and saying, hi, how are you? Engaging every single person, never being on that cell phone. Again, giving that person your full attention, whether it's somebody, a customer or a prospect walking by, a customer coming in the store, or a friend that you're simply talking with. And, you know, doing this properly, not using slang, not interrupting them, using clear communication and being respectful, using full sentences, if you meet somebody for the first time, it's not, hey, bro, you know, it's, it's hello, you know, hello, Tom, how are you? Or hi, Wendy, it's nice to see you again. Some teens have these skills, but then some don't. So I think the ones that don't, we owe it to them to provide them with the information and let them practice it. I think we have to give them credit too. A lot of these teens are smart. You know what? A lot of teens tell me, I'm glad I have this information. It's valuable. I need to learn it. So they're no different than us. I think we just have to expose them to it.
That's right. And I think as a parent, you can do that by modeling it, whether you're at your dinner yes. table with you in your home, or you're going out to supper as a family or with, you know, friends or whomever you're going to supper with, and then having that conversation ahead of time with setting those expectations for that child or that teen of what to do with that. And I think also having that opportunity to practice, say, ordering at a restaurant, and you can do that at a super young age. We have three boys and we had always started that when they were little, in terms of having them start to order for themselves so that you can really kind of work on that clear communication. If a student or a teen is not in a home where that is not modeled or so forth, what could a professional or an educator do to encourage that effective communication for that student to help model it for them?
That's a great question. Let me first say, I love that you're having your kids practice ordering in a restaurant. And I love that you set expectations up beforehand, because I'm sure you've gone to a lot of restaurants and you see the whole family on their screens, or the family's eating and the kids are on their screens. So to set that up for a young adult who hasn't had that experience, I would take one situation at a time and tell them, you know, why don't we practice just smiling and saying hello to that waiter when they come by and saying thank you. Just those two things. And then modeling that, maybe having them try that, or if you're with them, model that for them. Because I think a lot of, you hit it, the nail on the head. I think a lot of it is modeling, because what do teens see? They see their parents on their cell phones. And I see this all the time at dinner. So what are the kids going to do?
Right.
And that's a problem. So I think taking one situation at a time, taking a young adult aside and saying, the next time you go to a restaurant, just practice, like you said, practice smiling, saying hi to that waiter or waitress, and when they take your order, and just say thank you very much. Practice these and say please. So putting all these into effect, I was volunteering for the Autism Alliance of Michigan, and I was teaching these young adults how to answer the phone properly. They were going into their first jobs, and they're great young adults. And one of the young adults raised his hand and asked me, why do I have to learn this? I'm just doing filing. I said, well, what if the receptionist is at lunch and you're the only one there to answer the phone? And he said, that happened to me yesterday. I just started my job 2 days ago. So let's prepare them before they're in that situation.
Absolutely. And I know, as when I was in that classroom, I at some point had taught self-contained at the high school level, students that were juvenile delinquents and had learning needs and differences in a smaller classroom setting. And we would practice that, and I would model it within the classroom as an educator. And a lot of times, you know, if this was in the South, and they would say, oh, Miss, why do I have to do this? And I'm like, in our community, our classroom community, this is how we are going to do it here. And hopefully you're going to take some of this and go and add it to when you're in your community outside of the school and outside of our classroom. And so they really started to get that sense of that modeling of please and thank you. And, you know, not yeah, or, but, you know, and even with my personal children, you know, if I ask them something, I really am big on it's either yes or yes, ma'am. And I know I get a lot of some pushback for that, or people, but, you know, I just think it's important to model these basic skills. So in the world of disabilities, communication can sometimes present some barriers. How do teens with disabilities who use communication devices, how can they ensure they are effectively communicating if they have a communication device?
Do you mean as far as if they, and let me preface one thing, just so I'm not an expert. What happened, I wrote my book for all teens, and then the autism community picked it up and the special education community picked it up. So I don't want to pretend to be an expert as far as special education, because I'm not. But as far as what you're asking, as far as if they have a device, do you mean if they're deaf or, and have a little device on their like the audio device that they use, things like that?
Right. So if they use a touch screen to use as their communication piece.
Oh, great point. I think it still holds true. I think the body language is so important. I think the eye contact, if they're comfortable doing that, if they're not, look at somebody's nose or mouth. I think that respect can still be shown. And I think that they can text or however else they're communicating, but then after they're done texting or using that device to communicate, still look up and smile. And when the person answers, then answer with full sentences, complete sentences, please and thank you. I think everything can still be done. It's just a different matter of method of communicating.
That's right. Let's talk about the importance of face-to-face communication. Sure. And how is it changing for our teens now? And then how do you see that changing in the future?
Yeah, I've really noticed it changing. I've noticed, I called a store the other day. Who did I call? That was, yeah. And you know, I could just tell they didn't, it was a bike store and it was a teen. And I think what's changed is these young adults are so used, like you had mentioned, so used to being on these screens, they're very uncomfortable with face-to-face communication, even if by phone, if it's just phone communication. And I can also tell that the employer didn't train this person. But as far as how it's changed, I think it's changed dramatically. A lot of these young adults, like I said, are so used to looking down at a screen, it's very uncomfortable for them and not the norm to have that powerful, effective face-to-face communication, which you and I are used to. And I think the future, unless we do something to help these young adults communicate better, I think it's going to continue to get worse because the parents of these young adults and their parents and the kids, when they have kids, they're going to be on these cell phones even more. So I think it's good that we're stepping in to teach these social skills because I think you can have both, but you need effective guidelines for those smartphones. And I think face-to-face communication needs to come first before the smartphones. And it seems like it's reversed now.
What would you say some of those effective guidelines, what would that look like?
I would say effective guidelines really are, I hate to sound like this, but me personally, it would be master the face-to-face communication first, and then we'll talk about getting you a smartphone. Those would be my guidelines because we've done it the reverse way and look at the problems that we have. And, you know, just a parent or the school setting up social skills programs. But I think at the youngest age possible, I think elementary school is great. I think over in England, they have classes in kindergarten that are actually employment classes, you know, where the kids are learning to greet that customer properly. So that's what it would look like for me practicing this and giving these kids the information they need at a young age, at least by middle school, and helping them implement these and maybe having some guidelines at home, like no cell phones at night, you turn them in. You know, you don't have them in bed at 2 o'clock in the morning because a lot of these kids are losing sleep. So at least turn those cell phones in. And other guidelines may be you're limited to 2 hours a day after you've done your homework and after you've done some socializing and playing outside. I think there are things that we can do to modify this. I mean, right now it seems like they just get up there, just give them a cell phone and that's it.
Yeah. How can communicating effectively, so I'm going to kind of go the other direction online. So communicating effectively online can be difficult.
Yes.
Do you have any tips or suggestions for this type of communication?
Yes, I do. And I see this quite a bit. When you're communicating online, whether it's by text or email, you know, that teen is still representing themselves or the employer who they work for. So you want to use the same type of professionalism that you would face-to-face, whether it's a LinkedIn message, a text message, a Facebook post or a Facebook comment. I see this all the time with businesses. You know, I can just tell they thought, oh, we have a teenager working for us. We'll have them moderate our Facebook page. Well, somebody like yourself might ask, you know, what time is your restaurant open? I couldn't find it on your website. Hey, Wendy, it's all shorthand. You know, we OP, it'll be like, oh, at 5 and no thank you or anything. That's it. Or there's no response at all. So in that situation, it would be, for example, hello, Wendy, comma, thank you so much for your interest in coming to our restaurant. We're looking forward to seeing you. We open at 6 p.m. Please let me know if you have any questions. We are here to help. Again, thank you so much, Katie. What a difference that makes, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Well, so everything's got to be professional. Pardon me?
It sets the stage for what's to come once they enter that place of business. And again, you know, if we're talking about employment skills for our teens, setting them up for success so that they can then carry these skills with them throughout life. And so I'm going to ask a question, but I'm not sure if you'll have the answer, but I'm going to ask it. For our teens with disabilities, working on effective communication can be done through that IEP or that individualized education plan. Do you have any ideas or thoughts that educators could do that we could put in that specialized plan for that student to help work on communication skills so that they can then transfer those skills from school to employment?
Yes, I do. And I think that's a great question because that unemployment rate is so high and you've got so many bright students with disabilities. One thing I would highly recommend is to take these skills, practice them at home, a lot of the social skills, and then take them to a volunteering opportunity, such as maybe an animal shelter, where you can use these social skills and practice them and transfer them to the job setting. And you can also put that on the resume. For instance, if you're, maybe you go to PetSmart. I used to volunteer there on weekends and they had the big animal adoption events. Well, I would notice a lot of the kids that were volunteering were just kind of sitting in a chair. They weren't going up and greeting a customer and asking, you know, saying, hi, how are you? Thank you for coming today. What kind of dog or cat are you looking for? So if we can teach them the skills at home and then implement that greeting and that engagement with that customer, because that's going to happen when you're volunteering. And if you're at an animal shelter, you're going to see new people walk in. And you just say, hi, how are you? Thank you for coming. Let them walk around a little bit, then go up and ask, what type of animal are you looking for? I'm happy to help you. And then when they leave, thank you so much for coming in. Things like that. And then when they go to the world of work, it's the same thing. It's just a different setting. And I think that's really important.
I think it's amazing that you brought up the volunteer part on a lot of levels, but I really like the suggestion that you just gave in terms of helping guide them, because you do see students will come to volunteer. They may be required to have a set amount of volunteer hours, or they want to volunteer for other reasons, but they may not have the specific direction of what to do while they're there. And I think what you just said is spot on, right? So a student comes to volunteer, if the person that's doing the organization of that event, volunteering and coordinating those volunteers, they may not have gone through explicitly what you just said in terms of smile and greet and give a pause and let that person look through and then come back. So I think giving that information ahead of time is incredible for a better outcome of the volunteer experience for not only the team, but for the organization within itself.
Perfectly said, Wendy, because a lot of these opportunities, the parents can even ask their kids, oh, you know, if the child says, or the young adult says, I'm going to go volunteer, the parent can say, oh, what will you be doing? Let me give you a recent example. Oh, I'll be helping our Rotary Club. I'm part of Rotary Interact. I'll be helping our Rotary Club. They're volunteering to park cars at this gala event for this nonprofit. And this, the parent could say, well, what you want to do then, you want to create a great first impression, phones away, smile, greet that customer. And this is a true story, because I had 4 high school kids helping me and they were great kids, but I had to constantly tell them, you guys get off your phones. We need to create a great first impression. You want to smile, say hi. These people might become major donors if they have a great first experience as soon as they get out of that car. And, you know, it would make such a difference if parents could help them do that and practice with, what does that look like? I'm somebody coming to an event. How do you greet me? And how do you make me feel welcome? Because these people don't know anything about the nonprofit. They're, you know, they don't know where to go, you know, direct them. Where do I go after I park my car, for example? I think that would really help. And the volunteering is so important. It's great for connections too.
Yes. Yes. And I love that. That's why you and I are recording this episode as we are, to provide that insight again for both professionals and for parents, because I think sometimes we may not think about that, right? We may not think, we're just like, oh, we're going to take our child over to this volunteer thing, but maybe not think about what could we model for them. So I think that was really valuable insight on your behalf to share that, to model, you know, what are you think, you know, what does that role look like? What could you do within that role? And as you said, on the other side, it really then improves the experience, the user experience of the individual that's attending this event so that they then feel more connected to what they're doing. So I think it's a win-win all around.
It really is. It gives that young adult more confidence. You had mentioned it earlier. The organization is happy. And if a young adult says, I'm going to go raise funds, then if I was the parent, I would teach them, okay, let's go, let's do some role playing on how to ask for the donation. And if you're at a table, don't sit, be standing, don't be on your phone, don't be eating, don't be talking to your co-volunteers. Every single prospect that walks by, hi, how are you? Invite them to that table, listen, and then when they're ready, let's practice asking for that donation. You know, would you like to donate today? And then be quiet. So, you know, these are such important things because so many young adults go to volunteer and a lot of it is a fundraising event. And if they're not prepared, it doesn't make it very comfortable for them. They don't really want to do it again. And for the organization, it's not really a success for them other than they had somebody, a live person at the table or at the event.
Can the power of a smile be used for more than just a job setting or volunteer setting, kind of a work environment, you know, in terms of like the social life for teens, right? So how do these essential life skills apply to social life for teens?
Oh, that's huge. I mean, think about it. If a teen can walk up to somebody and smile and say, hi, I've seen you around and I just wanted to introduce myself. My name's Kurt. And see where that goes. I mean, it could be a lifelong friendship. Or if you see somebody in the hall, just smile and say hi. And after a month or two, you might see them at lunch and say, oh, would you like to eat lunch? You know, you're smiling, taking down those barriers, making that other person feel special and welcome. The power of a smile is huge. I mean, it changes everything. Because just think if that teen went up to that other student without a smile, what would that student be thinking? You know, it's that whole saying, don't assume. Well, they might assume, oh gosh, this person's mad at me. They're going to start a fight. I did something wrong. But if you're smiling, they're much more welcoming. So it can create these friendships that a lot of teens don't have, especially teens, unfortunately, with disabilities.
So what are some common ways to support our kids to discover their social skills?
Boy, I'll tell you what, I think getting them out of the house, getting them off those devices, getting them in social settings, and you said it best with the restaurants, have them practice ordering, have them, I hate to keep bringing up volunteering, but it's really one of the most powerful things they can do. Get them out volunteering. It feels, you know, the number one, I was listening to an interview with an author on happiness, and he said the number one thing that makes people happy is altruism. You have to drag them kicking and screaming to volunteer, but they'll talk about it the rest of their life. So I would say take your kids out to a volunteer event, make it a family event. Let them socialize with other people, introduce them, have them practice introducing themselves to other people. And there's all types of outdoor activities. You might want to take your kids hiking with another family, something like that. Have them practice those social skills. Even just going out, you know, I mean, shopping or something. Have them practice just saying hi when you walk in a store. Just, I think, things like that, everyday events.
Which make a huge impact. And so I've even had families, I've challenged families, and even my own personal children, that if you're in a social event and, you know, if for whatever reason, you're not very talkative, but, you know, start with one question. I want you to ask one person that you don't know, or you don't know very well, one question, and listen to the answer. And then I'm going to have you report it back. And then you can build from there, but it really is kind of starting to have them cross that invisible bridge of making those connections that you're going to need to do in the workforce. And also advocating.
I love it. Yes. Asking that one question, listening, getting to know that person a little bit better. And, you know, activities, even I'm trying to think of other things families do together. The dog park, places like that are a perfect spot for your suggestion of asking one person a question. Definitely.
With a smile.
With a smile. Like, that's right.
With a smile. How do we support our teens to define their own success?
Well, I think we have to let our teens, do you mean success in life or success in employment or both?
I would say both. Yeah.
I think not pushing them into something that they don't want to do. You know, a lot of parents, I think, oh, I'm a doctor. My child has to be a doctor or something like that. Find out what they're interested in. Encourage them to pursue their own dreams. You never know. I mean, there are a lot of long shots, but, you know, I watched the Alan Jackson documentary the other night. What a long shot. But now look at, you know, he's the country singer. Things like that. You just never know. Find out what they're interested in and try to support them in those things. And, you know, they'll define their own methods of success because they can try something and fail and they'll learn from it. And then they'll try something else. I think that's really important to help guide them towards things that they have an interest in.
Should students or teens share that idea of success with someone else? Would that help kind of solidify their thoughts?
You know, sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't. I think a lot of times if you're talking about something that you really want to do, unfortunately, a lot of people automatically, oh, that will never work. So I think with sharing it with the right people who will be supportive of your idea is great. Maybe your best friend or somebody that's always been encouraging to you. I think that's smart. But sometimes, I don't know if you've seen that, but sometimes people just think it's a crazy idea. You know, maybe you've got a young adult who wants to be a doctor and they're not good at science and they tell everybody that and everybody says, oh, you'll never be able to do that. But, you know, determination and persistence, that's really 99% of it.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. What are the three top career skills for teens to master sooner rather than later?
Boy, that's another great question. I think social skills such as the greeting we talked about, because they're going to be greeting that employer in the interview. They're going to be greeting people at work and they're going to be greeting friends. So I think that type of social skill, I think phone etiquette is really important. And that includes making sure their voicemail is professional. Mm-hmm. That's super important. They might have a phone call from an employer or a prospective employer and also have a phone call from a customer. That I think that's really important. The other thing I want to mention is cleaning up their social media accounts. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, you can do a search. And if I see Katie's Facebook page and it's wide open and I see her drinking and drunk, a video of her at college in her sorority, I'm really going to think twice about, do I want this person working for me? And do I want the liability? Maybe not. I'll go on to the next candidate. So I think that's really important. And I think just having that customer, are you talking about work, social skills at work too?
Yeah, all of it.
Okay, yes. I think having that mindset, putting yourself in that customer's shoes, which a lot of people have trouble doing, and having the social skills to have empathy for that person and understanding and not just brushing that person off. If they have a question such as, do you carry a size 5 woman's shoe or something? I'm just making this up. Instead of saying no, say no, but you know what? Let me go find out. Let me go find out if we can do a special order or maybe we have something in our other store. Going the extra mile, I think, is a great social skill. Whether an employer asks you to stay late one day or work a weekend, really having that mindset of treating that company that you work for like it's your own business, and treating that customer like it's your best friend.
You have mentioned that the autism community has really held on to the essence of your book and your training. How have you seen that translate for students with autism or students that are impacted with learning needs and differences?
I hear from a lot of teachers, especially Project Search instructors, because a lot of them use my resources, and a lot of teachers will tell me, it seems like a week after they get the materials, they'll say, you know what? I noticed my students, they're smiling more, they're friendlier to each other, and they're communicating properly and much better. I'm really looking forward to the outcomes with this. I see that quite a bit. And then I hear about different jobs people got. I had an employee come up to me. This was, gosh, a couple of years ago. I was at a store and she was a young adult. She did not have a disability, but she said, she saw my wallet and my business card. And she said, oh, you wrote that book? And I said, yes. She goes, you know what? Our employee uses that book for training here. And I wish she would have bought enough copies because I don't have my own copy. But she said the very first customer I waited on after I read your book, she called my manager to tell him, I'm sorry, what a nice job I did.
What a great story.
I think these are just, you know, these are skills that we shouldn't really even have to teach. They're just the simple little things that are the big things in business and for students with autism, because a lot of teachers tell me they like the material because it's short and quick and easy to read for short attention spans. It has visuals with educational captions and there's no wasted words. So it's really quick. And they're the skills that the students need to get a job and keep a job.
How do we get teens invested in this process?
I think exposing this to them. Here's one thing I notice a lot when I'm at trade shows and I'm a vendor. The parents of the neurotypical kids will always be, oh, my teen won't read that. And then if they do get my resources, I'll see them 2 months later and they'll say, I caught my teen in bed the other night reading your material. Or I had one lady say, oh, my son's in seventh grade. He's more of a hunter type. He hates reading. But she said, I'll spend the $15 just to take a risk. And I saw her a year later. She ran up to me and she goes, good job. My son read your book and even took it to school to show his teacher. I think we have to give our kids some credit that, you know, they can read even though they're on their screens. Now, the parents of the neurodiverse kids, that's not the same issue. I think they're hungry for any type of resources. So I think to get teens to buy in, I think first we have to expose them, give them some credit that yes, they can read, expose them to the material. Because what I found is most young adults seem to know they need these skills. I mean, I hear from them all the time and they'll say, you know what? I slouch a lot. Thank you for writing the book. Or I want to start a dog walking business. I never know how to do it. Thank you so much. It seems to be the parents that don't want to give the kids these resources in many cases. They just think they don't give their kids enough credit. They think, oh, my kid will never read that. Well, let's give them a chance, whether it's my resources or somebody else's. So I think exposing them to it first, because it's, you know, my resources, I spent 9 months with teenagers and they helped me write it so that other teens would read it. So if teens won't read my book, I don't think they'll read anything. I don't know if that makes sense, but.
What is the relationship between social skills and customer service?
Oh, huge. It's absolutely everything, because you can create a customer for life if that first interaction is positive with a smile, like we talked about, with respect. The lifelong value of a customer, that's thousands and thousands of dollars. And think of all the referrals. And now with social media, if you give great customer service, you've got those great reviews. So it's everything, because as soon as you get a bad customer service incident, most people won't tell you about it. Most people will just never come back. So for business, it's everything. For schools, it's everything. With the parents, with the students, I wouldn't start a business without, in fact, our store was a startup retail store. We had a competitor right across the street, a competitor down the street. Nobody would sell to us because all the lines were tied up, all the brands. But those two other businesses were out of business in 2 years. It wasn't anything we did. They just had bad service. And we had great teenagers who had great service. It's everything in business.
Work, as we know, can be super stressful. How do we teach our teens to navigate that stress?
I think a big part is preparation. Like you're doing with when you go to a restaurant. I think just throwing our young adults into a job or a career, whatever it is, without preparing them is really a recipe for a ton of anxiety and stress and disaster. I think preparing them with these social skills we're talking about, so they're comfortable with coworkers, they know how to interact with customers and their employer and how to be respectful, it's a much better outcome for them. And it gives them confidence. If we teach them these skills first, then they have confidence. And when you have confidence, the stress level goes way down. When I had our 6-week training program for our teen employees, they got on that sales floor and they were so confident. I would listen to them. I was so proud of them, because you might walk in and say, well, what's the difference between the stitching in this O'Neill wetsuit and the stitching in this one? And they were right on it. I mean, or what's the difference between this bearing and this rollerblade and this bearing? Why is this more expensive? They had all the answers, and they had the answers about the competitors, and they were great. But they had that confidence. They didn't have any stress. When they first started, if I would have just thrown them on the sales floor, They would have quit. I would have felt awful, and they would have been full of anxiety. I mean, who wouldn't? So I think prepare your kids as much as you can for that workplace before they get in there. And if they can do some volunteering in that sector, I think that helps them get some product knowledge also. But learn as much as they can about the company, about the competitors, before they get on the job, in case the employer doesn't teach them that, which a lot of employers won't.
How do we connect with our teens at their level?
I think it's important to provide guidance and leadership and be, like you said, a good role model for them. I think setting high expectations is really important. I think starting out in baby steps, if they've been kind of connected to those cell phones and addicted to them, I think maybe connecting with them and saying something like doing some role playing. Say, you know, how do you go up to a friend when you're making friends? Oh, I just tap them on the shoulder. Well, how would you feel if somebody came up to you and just tapped you on the shoulder? What if somebody came up to you and said, "Hi, Brad, how you doing today?" Well, Brad might say, "Well, I'd like that." Well, can you practice that today? Something like that. Just start out with baby steps, really small. One thing, have them practice it, get confidence, and then come back, see where it is. A week later, have them practice another thing. I think on their level, I think they're looking for guidance and leadership. I don't think they're looking for parents that just want to be their friend. I think they're looking, you know, I think they respond well to some benchmarks and some rules. Who doesn't? I don't like not to know what's going on. Everybody likes that. So I think start them off with baby steps, one social skill, maybe a week, see how they do and be flexible with it.
What can parents do if they're worried about their teen or their student that they may not be quite prepared socially, behaviorally, or ready for the career world?
I think that's really common. And I heard a grocery store owner the other day, and he came up to me and he just said, "These young adults, they're not prepared. They're not ready. I can't even use them." So I think to prepare them for success, I think the younger, the better. Practice these social skills with them and then have them, I'm going to bring up volunteering again, then have them go volunteer in something they're interested in to practice these skills and maybe have a part-time job. I think having a job is so important for our young adults, whether they're in middle school, having their own lawn service or something where they're mowing 5 lawns a week. Don't have a lawn service mow your lawn for you. Have your young adults do that. And then in high school, have them get a part-time job. I think that's the most important thing they can do. Prepare them with the social skills, have them do some volunteering to practice them, and then have them go get a part-time job to gain confidence. They can fail. They learn grit. It's another great book, is Grit. Wish I would have read that when I was their age. But yes, I think a part-time job is huge in something they're maybe interested in. If they're not, it's still teaching them the foundations for success, like working at McDonald's. I had kids that worked at McDonald's, and I knew they are going to be great employees because they have those foundational skills.
I love how it's broken down, right? I think you have made this very approachable for whether you're a parent or a professional supporting students of all different types of learners. But I think first and foremost, modeling it within a home, modeling it within your classroom or your office where you engage with teens, and then taking that step by step, you know, and that from just an educator's standpoint is an excellent way for our students to be able to learn to break it down to the smallest chunks that particular student needs. And I think volunteering, you know, is brilliant with the lens of what skills can we teach them within this volunteering space that can then transition over to a paid engagement within a company. And then you're also networking and doing all those good things with volunteering and getting an experience of something that you may be interested in. So I think that's excellent advice. As we wind down our conversation today, is there something that I did not ask, that I didn't know enough to ask, I should have asked you?
You know, that's a great question. You were going to ask me my favorite resource, I think, something like that, or my favorite person, I think.
I am, yep. Mm-hmm.
Well, I discovered
that's gonna be my next question, but we can line it all up together.
I'll give you two answers. Well, one, my favorite resource is a book called Disconnected And my favorite person who I met on LinkedIn is Tom Kersting. He's a psychotherapist and he was a school counselor. And I recommend all parents and teachers read Disconnected. It's about the smartphones and what's happening to teenagers to their brains with the smartphones. And as far as a question you can ask, oh, maybe ask how I was connected with Temple Grandin.
Yes, please. Yes, tell us a story.
Well, I was watching the Detroit Red Wings hockey game. It was 7:30 at night and my phone rang and I thought it was a crank call. It said Temple Grandin, but I answered the phone. She's wonderful. She talks really fast. And she said, Kurt, read your book today. You use my testimonial to get this book out to all teens to lower the unemployment rate. And I said, hold on, I have to get a piece of paper and a pen. And then she even said, now that I remember, she said, I love your chapter on volunteering and the animal shelters because that will transfer into the jobs. And I told her I loved her movie and I've got some of her books. The reason I say animal shelters too is it's proven that the number one thing that teens care about are animals. So why not let them do something that they enjoy?
Excellent. What would it be and why if you could have a billboard with one tip for parents?
I wrote this down because I thought it was such a good question. You are not doing your kids any favors by giving them a smartphone. That would be my billboard. And I know that may not be popular, but I think it's so true because I think a lot of things that at least my parents did that I didn't like when I was younger, now that I'm older, I really respect that. I'm like, you know what? They were absolutely right. And they were from the greatest generation and they were strict, but I appreciated it because had they given into some of those things, I would have been worse off.
How can people find you?
Oh, my website is www.smilethebook.com. And my book is Smile and Succeed for Teens. It's a crash course in social and career skills. And I do have a teaching guide, a parent's guide, classroom packs, and an online course and an audio book if you have students who don't like to read.
What is the best way for people to connect with you?
If they go to either my LinkedIn profile, and I think you'll have a link to that, or they're welcome to contact me there on my website. At the bottom of the page, there's a contact, or they can email me at kurt@smilethebook.com. That's kirt@smilethebook.com. I am on Amazon, my books, but I'm happy to respond if anybody has questions or needs some guidance on different resources.
Such a pleasure. I really appreciate your time. And I'm hoping that folks are listening and start to apply this nuggets of information that you have shared, because it's very easy to just start small and grow big and help our kiddos just be the best version of themselves and help improve outcomes when it comes to future education, employment, and independence. So thank you so much for your time.
Oh, you're welcome, Wendy. Thank you so much. It's been an absolute pleasure.
You bet. All right. Take care.
You too. Thank you.
Thank you again for listening today. What an important conversation to think about as we head into any type of support that we provide for our own personal children or the students that we support in and out of the classroom, and thinking about greeting others, proper phone etiquette, and cleaning up that social media account as a teenager, as you're entering the workforce, so it doesn't come back to bite you. I also want you to think about high expectations as the adult to be that role model. Start with baby steps. And I love the idea of volunteering in with animals to help build that capacity for our students so that they can then be successful. Thank you again for strategizing with us and spending your precious time listening. If you've loved what you've heard, give us a like and a follow at Learning Essentials. Looking for free tips? Head over to learningessentialsedu.com and you can download free tips to prepare for an IEP meeting plus bonus questions to ask. I'm your host, Wendy Taylor. If you need more special education support, visit Learning Essentials, where we provide an individualized and systematic approach to supporting students with various learning needs and differences through academic coaching and educational therapy, and BrainCamp, our executive function model. If you are a parent, I've got you covered through IEP coaching. Hope this conversation helps make it a great day.